Hare Krishna. Thank all of you for coming here today for this three-part seminar which titled Intelligence Over Mind. We often talk about mind over matter, where we see how our thoughts can change the reality that we are experiencing. But when you're talking about intelligence over mind, I'll talk about how all thoughts are not the same. What happens in our inner world also has different layers to it. So I'll speak primarily based on Bhagavad Gita 6.25, 26 and 27. So this will be a three-part seminar. Okay. So first part I'll be talking about conviction. Why should we do what we are meant to do? So basically these are three broad steps in self-transformation. We all feel during the course of our life that I want to become a better person. That even in our spiritual life, in our day-to-day life, in our interactions with each other. So we want to become better. And if our intelligence can direct our mind, then whatever efforts we want to do to improve ourselves, we will succeed in that. So that learning for how the intelligence can direct the mind, that is essential for self-transformation. And that involves three broad steps. First is conviction. This is what I should do. Why should I do this? And we are convinced that this is important, then even if I don't feel like doing it, I will persevere in that. So conviction of the intelligence is the first step. In general, whenever we want to do something, the reason why we are going to do it, that's our driving inspiration. That's conviction. Then when we are trying to do it, our mind will go here and there. Sometimes we'll feel like doing it. Sometimes we'll not feel like doing it. So that requires concentration, perseverance. So how to do it? When the mind wanders here and there, how to bring it back and how to focus it. And the third is conversion. Conversion means our mind itself gets transformed. And what does transformation of the inner world actually mean? What can we expect? What is realistic? And what is unrealistic? So conviction will be the first part. Concentration will be the second part, which will be taking today from 11 to 1. And the last part, conversion, will be what I'll be taking to tomorrow afternoon during the Sunday feast program. Now, another way to understand this is that there's the conviction which is required for the intelligence. And then with the conviction of the intelligence, there is concentration of the mind. The mind is going to wander here and there, and we have to focus it. And ultimately, the conversion or the transformation that happens is of the heart. Now, I'll elaborate what these three mean. So, I'll take some metaphors to illustrate this. In our inner world, there is an impulsive side, which is like the mind. And there is a reflective side, which is like the intelligence. And while our mind is the source of various feelings and emotions, but there are certain things in which our emotions are deeply invested. And that is what we use to refer to the heart. So the mind is the stimulator, trigger of hundreds of feelings. So I'm walking along a road, I see a hotel, something nice to eat, I feel like I'll go and eat it. So a desire comes in, I feel good, I feel bad. So we have many feelings about different things. Those come from the mind. But we have feelings about some things very deeply. That is where we are strongly emotionally invested. So the place where our deepest emotions are stored, that is our heart. Ultimately, it is the soul. But the soul's consciousness is currently channeled in a particular way. So I'll talk about this difference a little bit later. But broadly, we want that with the conviction of the intelligence, this is what is important for me, this is what I am going to do, then we learn to focus the mind, concentrate. This is what you should do, this is what you should not do. And then after that, our deepest center of emotions, for some of us it might be money, for some of us it might be fame, for some of us it might be our looks. So this center of emotions, it's not that our emotions associated with money or fame or looks will go away. But that will not be the center of our emotions. Krishna can become the center of emotions. That is the conversion of the heart. That's what Yeah. Are we allowed to ask questions? Can we have it at the end, if you don't mind? Let me complete a thought flow, because sometimes certain things which I'm speaking now may become clear a little later as we move on. So this is what we are going to do overall in the seminar. And today's focus will be on, conviction. Conviction, why to do? Srila Jiva Goswami, in his Sandarbhas, explains that there are two kinds of devotees. There are sadhakas and siddhas. Sadhakas are those who are practicing, and siddhas are those who are perfected. So the siddhas, they stay at the spiritual platform because of their preeti. Preeti is their affection for Krishna. But the sadhakas, they will stay at the spiritual platform by their buddhi. Because we may not feel affection for Krishna consistently. So it's the buddhi that will keep us at the spiritual platform. So I said I'll talk 6.25, 26 and 27, these three verses. So 6.25 is, Krishna says, Shanai shanair uparamed buddhya dhruti gruhitaya atma samstham manah kritva na kinchid apichintayed. So 6.25, I'll take that as a starting point for talking about conviction. 6.26, I'll talk for concentration. And 6.27, I'll talk for conversion. So Krishna is sitting over, shanai shanai, gradually, step by step. Uparamed. The mind is wandering here and there. Slow its motion down. Uparamed. Bring it down. Shanai shanai uparamed. Buddhya dhruti gruhitaya. Buddhi, intelligence. But what kind of intelligence? Dhruti is conviction or determination. So, buddhi sustained by dhruti. Sometimes you used to display the verses also. Can you do that?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you can't do both.
Then she has to take control from there.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. Then she can switch.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Then you have to say that to move next verse.
Okay. Let's try it out. You can use it. If we have to keep changing it repeatedly, it can become a problem. So this is 6.25. So, Bhagavad Gita. Buddhya dhruti gruhitaya. Shanai shanair uparame buddhya dhruti gruhitaya. Atma samstham manah kritva nakinchidapi chintayed. You can repeat the verse after. Shanai shanair uparame buddhya dhruti gruhitaya. Atma samstham manah kritva nakinchidapi chintayed. So, shanai shanai, gradually, step by step, uparamed. So, uparamed means bring to stop, slow down. Buddhya dhruti gruhitaya, with intelligence, that is, dhruti is determination or conviction, sustained by conviction. Atma samstham. So, fix the mind on the self, in transcendence, on atma. Manaha kritva, doing this, and nakinchidapi chintayet. The mind will wander here and there. Don't let it wander. So the key step here is, for focusing the mind, Krishna is saying, buddhya dhruti gruhitaya. Intelligence sustained by conviction is extremely important. Now, the word buddhi and dhruti, both of them are used later on in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna talks about buddhi in the three modes, and he talks about dhruti in the three modes. In 18.30 to 32, he talks about buddhi in the three modes. And then 33 to 35, he talks about dhruti in the three modes. So buddhi refers more to intelligence, which is actually how we take in what we see from outside. I'll elaborate on this a little later. But dhruti, determination, refers to how we act in the world. So buddhi is concerned more with jnanendriyas. How I perceive the world properly. And dhruti is concerned more with karmendriyas. How I act in the world. Both are related, but the focus in both is different. So intelligence sustained by determination or conviction. That means it's not just abstract intelligence. It is intelligence that is purposefully directed towards practical actions. So can we go back to the PowerPoint? So we're going to talk about the 6.26. As I said, that conviction means why should I do what I need to do? Please go ahead. So this will be a major theme of today's class. Two thoughts about thoughts. What this means is, we use the word thought in two distinct senses. Say, I've just taken two conversational usages. Thank you. Two conversational usages. Say, I had a thought. And I say, I have given this a lot of thought. Now here, although the word is thought is the same, but the meaning is quite different. When I had a thought, I say that means, okay, just something came in my mind. So it basically means that first meaning of thought is that it refers to a starting activity within consciousness. Okay, something got simulated and I'm thinking about it. Sometimes we say I'm thinking aloud. That means I've not really thought about it, but as the thoughts are coming, I'm expressing it in my words. So thought can refer to a starting activity within our consciousness. And thought can refer to also sustained, systematic focus of consciousness. I've given this a lot of thought. So in one sense, the first meaning of thought is something which refers to something that occurs in our consciousness. It just appears. And the second meaning of thought is something which we do. Okay, I have analyzed this. I have processed this. I have contemplated. So I have given it due thought. So the word thought has two distinct meanings. And in general, we sometimes just take words at face value. So we hear words, and if we do not clarify what the meaning of the word is, sometimes both of us may be using the same word, but the meaning may be, the ideas in the mind may be quite different. So there are concepts and there are terms. Concepts are intellectual. Terms are verbal. Terms are same as words. So concepts being inside us, we can't grasp them unless we have some verbal tools. How do I express? So for that, the verbal tools are terms. So one example to illustrate this is like a suitcase and the handle of the suitcase. The suitcase is like the concept. And the handle is the term. So if I have a big suitcase but I don't have a handle, it becomes very difficult to move the suitcase. Once I was traveling in America from one place to another, just when I was about to leave to the airport, we were pulling the handle of the suitcase and the handle broke. And then I was asking, can we get this fixed? So the devotees told me, in America, fixing thing is more difficult than buying a new thing. So the devotees gave me a new suitcase. We just quickly transferred my luggage into that new suitcase. And I went. And then I came to the destination at the carousel. Because I was not handling the suitcase, others were driving it for me. I forgot how the suitcase looked like. So all that I remembered was that it had a blue handle. So then when all the suitcases were coming out, every suitcase with the blue handle, we were pulling it out. Is this my suitcase or is this not my suitcase? So the point I'm making is, the same handle may be attached to different suitcases. Many suitcases may have a blue handle. So the blue handle is connected to a particular suitcase, but that handle may be that colored handle may be connected to many different suitcases also. So like that, a term may be associated with many different meanings. In English, there are many. I think the word run has the maximum number of meanings. It has like more than 100 meanings. So like that, there are terms and there are concepts. So the word thought has these two different meanings associated with it. And these two meanings are important to understand for understanding how the mind and intelligence function. And our topic is intelligence over mind. So, So if we are not thoughtful, our thoughts will make us a fool. What is that? The thoughtful means, unless I thoughtfully evaluate what is happening, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to do. Should I do it? Should I not do it? Then we will end up doing things which are unworthy. You know, if I'm working on my computer, doing some important work, but suddenly some notification comes up on Facebook, some window pops up, And then I start reading that. I start watching that. I go one video, I go to YouTube, I start seeing this video, then that video, that video. So if I'm not discerning, then I can waste a lot of my time getting distracted. So here, by thoughtful, going back to this example again of what is happening on the computer, our thoughts will make us a fool. In this case, when I'm using the word thought, I'm referring to something which pops up on the screen of our consciousness. It's like, okay, some window has popped up over here. Some link is over here. So this, if we just keep following whatever comes up on the screen within us, we will get distracted. So being thoughtful means that we are evaluating. Okay, this link is here. This is what I am reading. Is this worth reading? Or is it worth reading right now? So evaluating what is happening, that is being thoughtful. Otherwise, whatever is happening, we just do it. That is being thoughtless. It's not that thought is absent. Thought in the first sense, when there is an activity within consciousness, that is there. But thought in the second sense, where we are really contemplating things carefully, that is not there. So, yeah. Now, intelligence over mind. Here, if we understand these two meanings of the word thought, then the mind is the presenter of thought. So, in the mind, thoughts come up. The mind brings up this thought. Hey, you know, why not eat this? Why not watch that? Why not go there? Why not do this? So now, when the mind presents the thought, at that time, if we are not very discerning, then we may just get carried away. I am reading something and some link pops up. Oh, let me go and see it. Let me watch it. And then I get distracted. So the mind is where thought, so when I use the word bracket one, that means the first meaning of the word thought. The starting activity within consciousness. That's what pops up. So the mind is the presenter of thought. Whereas the intelligence is meant to be the evaluator of thought. Thought in the first sense. Okay, this idea has popped up. It's not that all ideas that pop up within the mind are bad. There can be many good ideas also. Sometimes we get inspiration. And that's a good idea. So it's not that we necessarily reject whatever the mind is saying, but we have to evaluate it. So the evaluator of the intelligence, also of the thought, in the first sense of the word thought, that is the role of the mind. And then, evaluator of thought, that's what intelligence is. And then, after that, the mind, intelligence is the producer of thought, in the second sense. That means, I have given this a lot of thought. That means, I have deliberated deeply on this, and this is my conclusion. So, we want to be, if we want to be thoughtful, that means, we want our intelligence to play a role, and then evaluate the thoughts, and then produces a reasoned course of action. This is what I should do. This is what I should not do. Going back to the example of the screen on which we are reading something, but there are various other links or pop-ups that are there. So the links or pop-ups that appear, they are appearing because of the mind. But then when we evaluate, okay, should I do this? Should I not do this? That's the evaluator is the intelligence. And then, okay, yeah, I'm reading this, but this seems to be quite an urgent thing. Now, I need to pay attention to this right now. Sometimes a pop-up might be important. Okay, then I'll go and look at it right now. Or, okay, this is notification, I can see it later. So then, there's a producer of thought in the sense of there's reasoned reflection based on which we arrive at a course of action. So in our inner world, both these things are happening. That there are these thoughts popping up, and there is thoughts emerging through reflection. But by default, if you are not discerning, the first is always going to happen. If we are on the net, always there are going to be, we are reading something, that in our browser, there are always going to be many links which are there. And when Krishna says, Shanai shanai rupare buddhya dhruti gruhitaya, atma samstha manah kritva, keep the consciousness fixed on the self. What that means is, whatever is the important thing for us, we focus on that. And okay, there are so many other things over there. Nakinchidapi chintayet. Don't get distracted by them. Now, we have links which are sometimes just passively there. We have to click on them. Sometimes the pop-ups come up and they're quite insistent. They just fill the screen. Sometimes some pop-ups come up in such a way that actually the Yes is very prominent. And you have to say no, you have to search. Where is that cross? Isn't it? You can't find the cross itself. So like that, sometimes some pop-ups come up very forcefully. And when that happens, it suddenly occupies our consciousness. And unless we are discerning, we will not look for that cross and we will not click it off. Not only that, the browser within is quite a dangerous browser. In the sense that, normally if some link is there, some pop-up is there, we have to do some action. We have to click it. By which it will then open up. Or then we'll go to some other page. Now sometimes when some programs get installed on the computer, we visit some site and then it installs the program. Normally when a program is to be installed, it will ask us permission. Yes or no. And usually if our computer is safe, then the default option there is no. That's where the click is. And then if I want to do yes, I go and click yes over there. Sometimes the default option is yes. And then if I don't want the program to be installed, then I have to click no and go no. And sometimes some comes with not only the default yes, but they see inactivity as a yes. That means the pop-up has come up, and if you don't say no within say 30 seconds or 1 minute, then it will auto install that. So our mind tends to be like that. That based on our past conditionings, certain options pop up. And then because we are habituated to doing those things, unless we consciously say no to that, that will pop up and we'll automatically do it also. So some options come with a default yes and some options come up with a default no. Say if we have a conscience which is strong, we say, okay, come on, watch. If some say obscene ad pops up, say, no, I should not watch some of this. Then by default, our option is no. Sometimes there also the desire may suddenly pop up and we may go over there. But by default, if the conscience is strong, it will be no. But suppose some say a relatively harmless kind of pop-up comes up. Okay, some notification on Facebook, some news, some breaking news, some this. Then maybe the default option is yes for us. We just look at it and then we just go over there. So basically, there is the mind as the presenter of thought is constantly active. It is repeatedly presenting things. And depending on the kind of conditionings that we have, that means depending on the kind of choices that we have made in the past, the particular options may open up by default. Now, not only that, if suppose there was some kind of browser where that browser, nowadays we have artificial intelligence systems coming up, so they can locate where our eyes are, where our eyes are focused. So imagine if there were a browser which would notice if our eyes are on a particular link. And just our glancing at a link causes that link to open up. Then we would be endlessly distracted. I look at something, just a glance there, that link opens up automatically. And then I look at that link and then some other link is there. I just glance at it, that also opens up. And we just go from one link to another link to another link. So the links in the mind are like that. That if we just dwell on it, it will open up. Adhyayato vishayan pumsa sangasteshu pajayate. In 2.62, when Krishna describes this whole sequence, that from contemplation, attraction comes. From attraction, infatuation happens. And the whole sequence goes down to self-destruction. So just our attention is all that is needed for the mind to take that as a cue for assent. Assent means yes. Sometimes we just attentively hear someone, and that is, we may be non-committal. I'm just giving you a hearing. I'm not saying yes or no. But in some cases, we just give the mind the attention, and the mind equates attention with assent. It says yes. That okay, you're saying yes, and I'll do it. So the mind has links that open up like that. And that's why we need to be careful when we are dealing with the mind. That it will take attention to be assent. Now moving on. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Buddhir Jnanamasam Moha, where Krishna talks about how he is the source of everything good, all the various qualities in this world, there he defines intelligence. He says, intelligence means to see things in their proper perspective. See things in their proper perspective means what is more important, what is less important, what is urgent, what is not urgent, what is relevant, what is irrelevant. So this perspective is what is provided by intelligence. Again, going back to the example of the screen, which we are reading something and then something else is popped up. So the intelligence is what it evaluates. Okay, if there is some link on the screen, I can't deny its presence. It is there. Now sometimes, some pop-ups you can delete them. But some links come with some images and you can't delete them. As long as you are on that page, those images will be there. But we can decide what I'm going to focus on. This I can do later. Or this I don't need to do only. This is what I need to do right now. So to be able to see things in proper perspective, what is more important, what is less important, that is what intelligence's primary function is. And when the mind presents things, it presents them in a very forceful way. It presents, come on, this is so good, do it and do it now. And by its forcefulness, the mind can make even something which is insignificant seem to be all important. Something which is not at all important. Okay, it can be done later also. Even if I don't do it, it doesn't matter. But it can be made into all important. Because I was driving with one devotee, and that devotee was telling me that he was in the he's in the traffic police. And he was telling that many times when sports matches are going on. So, in India it is cricket, here it is baseball, other sports are there. So, when sports matches are going on, at that time, many young people, if they are driving their cars, what happens is, while they are driving the car, if some update happens, this team hit this ball, or this team hit this score, then what happens is, while driving, they get distracted. And they start looking at their mobile, they start looking at its screen, try to see what is the update. And because of this, they get distracted and often accidents happen. Now, okay, sports is a source of entertainment, but a distraction while driving can cost life. We can hurt ourselves, we can kill ourselves, we can kill someone else. But so when the mind starts feeling, hey, this sports, what happened? Who hit a sixer? Who got out? What happened? At that time, when the thought comes up, it can appear so important that focusing on the driving, which is much more important, we just neglect that. So, the mind doesn't see things in perspective. Whatever pops up within the mind, whatever the mind present, it says, you have to do this and do it now. And most of the times, when we do bad things, when we do something wrong, some people are psychopaths, sociopaths, they just have no conscience. They just heartlessly do terrible things. But most people are not like that. Most people are basically good people. Of course, goodness can also be at different levels. Some people may be in goodness, in passion, ignorance. But broadly speaking, most people do have some conscience. And they won't brazenly do wrong things. But still, they end up doing wrong things. Last year in Australia, I gave a whole talk on why good people do bad things. Normally, you think, why do bad things happen to good people? But that is true. But it is often good people also end up doing bad things. So why do good people do bad things? It is not because they are bad people, but it is because their mind distorts their sense of perspective. So a person who may be a very conscientious person, that person may not even raise their hand at someone. But they get infatuated, they're looking at the cricket score of them, and they drive over someone. They may cause the death of someone. How does that happen? Because their mind distorted their sense of perspective. So the mind will not tell us the bad is good. It can do that also. But for that kind of distortion to take place, it will take some time. But what the mind does is, the distortion is, It makes the frivolous seem serious, and the serious seem frivolous. So, okay, so watching some sports update, that's okay, but that's not all that important. When the mind distorts the perspective, it makes us feel that I need to look at the score right now. So that is frivolous. What is serious is making sure that we are driving properly. But the mind makes the frivolous seem serious, and the serious seem frivolous. Okay, look at the road. I can do that later. No, later there may not be no time for that. So the mind misleads us, especially when we have conscience, when we have a sense of right and wrong. It won't directly make us do the wrong things, but it will just make us seem that, okay, this is the right thing, you can do it later. And this thing, you do it right now. So it distorts our sense of perspective. It makes the frivolous seem serious. And one devotee was giving me the example. He says that, you know, I resolve I want to read Shastra every day. But he says, many days I forget to read Shastra. But he says, one day I just thought that practically no day do I forget to read the news. Then every day I will visit some newspaper site or have a newspaper at my home and I will read it. Now, we need to be aware of what is happening in the world. It's not that we need to be blind to it. But the point is that for the mind, reading news, it's almost become like a discipline. I'll do it. And even if I forget, you know, a whole day I've been busy, at night before sleeping, I'll just open the browser and see the news. But if at that time I have to read Shastra, I'm very tired to do this now. So basically, reading news is not bad, but what happens is the mind gives it such a sense of urgency. No, you have to do it. How can you not do it? But with respect to reading Shastra, it's important, but yeah, you can do it later also. So the mind distorts our sense of perspective. And that's how we end up neglecting that which is important and focusing or obsessing, giving inordinate amount of time and energy to that which is unimportant. So, we need introspection with respect to these two types of thoughts, two definitions of thoughts. We need introspection to understand that everything inside us doesn't represent who we are or who we want to be. Sometimes we all may feel angry, we may feel like snapping at someone, we may all feel greedy, sometimes we may all feel envious. There are many different kinds of thoughts that come within us. We can't see each other's thoughts, and that is a great blessing. If we were able to see each other's thoughts, not a single relationship would be possible. You think like this about me? You think like this? You have this thought, you have that thought. So, actually, nature, by its very arrangement, has given us a buffer, by which the thoughts inside us don't immediately get expressed externally. So the others can't see our thoughts, and even when the thought comes within us, we have a buffer by which we don't necessarily immediately express our thoughts. So everything inside us doesn't represent who we are. Sometimes we may feel lusty, sometimes we feel violently angry, but we may never do that. And if that thought we identify with it, we may act on it, and we may act in a way that misrepresents who we are. Like earlier I said, why do good people do bad things? Because when a bad thought comes up within them, then they just identify with it, they act on it. So by introspection we understand that, okay, this thought is there within me, but it is not who I really am. This is just something which has popped up. It'll be there, it'll go away. So it doesn't represent who I really am. And nor does it represent who I want to be. This is not what I want to be. This we will talk further in our last session when we talk about our values, what we can expect when we transform when bhakti transforms us. But by introspection, we have to recognize these two understandings of thoughts, and it's not that whenever any particular thought comes up, that means that either we have to act on it, or that it has a lot of significance. Thoughts are just events that happen within our consciousness. And they, if we consider like our neighborhood, physical neighborhood, so many things can happen in that neighborhood. No, there might be domestic violence going on, somebody might be committing a crime over there, there might be some corruption going on. So many things are happening over there. It doesn't immediately affect us. It may affect us if it starts happening, if it directly comes on us. But in our neighborhood, so many things may be happening. If we come to a public gathering, there are many different people over there. Now, some people we like, and some people we just don't like. Now, if we don't like, we acknowledge this person is present, but we move on with our work. We don't obsess on them. We can't control that, hey, you should not be over here. Well, why should I not be here? No? What do you do? So they want to be there. We can't stop them. So just like sometimes in our physical neighborhood, there might be unwanted activities happening or unwanted people present. Similarly, we could say in our inner neighborhood, in our consciousness, sometimes some unwanted things may happen. And sometimes some unwanted thoughts, unwanted desires, they may just pop up. So we can treat our inner world like a physical neighborhood. It's not that everything that is there, we have to identify with it. One example for this. Hey, okay, there's a apostrophe over there that has gone off. So, I think the computer loves Sanskrit. So suppose, if I start saying to myself, if I get the thought, oh, I can't lift my phone. All of you have your phone. You can take it out. And don't look at it. Okay, so now just think within yourself that, you know, you can think or you can repeat over me. I can't lift my phone. I can't lift my phone. I can't lift my phone. And lift your phone now. I can't lift my phone. You lift your phone. I can't. Now what has happened is, I may have the thought, I can't lift my phone. But that thought doesn't determine the reality. The thought is just an event occurring within my consciousness. Now it's not that all thoughts are necessarily unreal. Sometimes I may have paralysis in my hand. And at that time I can't lift my phone. That is true. But sometimes the thought may just be completely counterfactual. So thoughts by themselves are not real. Thoughts need to be evaluated. Some thought may reflect reality, some thought may not reflect reality. And even if a thought is real, more important, I'll talk about this in the next session, more important than whether a thought is real or not is whether the thought is helpful or not. That is something we will discuss later. But right now, our focus is that we don't have to take thought in the first sense, that some event occurring in our consciousness. We don't have to take thought very seriously. It's not that just because a thought has occurred, that necessarily means it indicates that, say, a bad thought has occurred, that means we are bad, or we are necessarily going to do something bad. So this distancing of ourselves from our thoughts in the first sense, that is what introspection is about. Krishna talks about this in 5.23 in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Shaknoti haivaya sodhum praksharir vimokshanat kama krodhod bhavam vegam sayukta sa sukhi naraha. So he says that kama and krodha, desire and anger, will come in your consciousness. And they will create some urges. Do this. Don't do this. Kama krodhod bhavam vegam. They will come. Vega, urge will come. But Krishna says, sodhum. Tolerate it. Tolerate it. It doesn't have to disorient you. It doesn't mean that you have to do those things. Prak sharir vimokshanat. Understand that these are simply produced by the body. We have a physical body, and the physical body has certain reactions that occur within it. But that doesn't mean we have to act on it. So, sa yuktaha sa sukhi naraha. One who can tolerate like this, that person is well situated. Yuktaha. Situated, spiritually connected, and engaged in yoga. And such person, sa sukhi naraha. That person will become happy. So basically, with our intelligence, we need to evaluate our thoughts. And when I talk about conviction, this is our topic was conviction for getting intelligence to act over the mind. The conviction means this understanding that everything inside me is not me, that I don't have to act on every thought that comes within us. The conviction that I need to evaluate my thoughts, not just embrace my thoughts. Moving forwards now. Yeah. So, we need to identify the thought. We don't need to identify with the thought. So, for example, sometimes things go wrong. One thing goes wrong, second thing goes wrong, third thing goes wrong. And then the mind starts telling a story. Life stinks. Tumhari kismati phooti hai. Your destiny is rotten. Nothing is going to happen. You are going to be ruined. Now yes, one, two, three things may have gone wrong. But that doesn't necessarily mean everything has gone wrong. So now as soon as this thought comes in the mind, what happens is, if we identify with it, then we start becoming depressed. We start feeling, things are going to go wrong. What can I do? Even if I do something, nothing is going to work. And we become more and more negative because of this. So there is fusion. Fusion means joining together, union. So when we identify with the thought, then there is a fusion with the thought that happens. We fuse with the thought. That means, everything is going wrong. That thought has come in my mind. And then when I fuse with that thought, then I become depressed. I become pessimistic. I become disheartened. So what we need to do is, we want to avoid the fusion with the thoughts. We want diffusion from thoughts. The thought is coming, but I need to diffuse myself from it, not fuse with it. So Krishna talks about this in the 14th chapter, which again I will elaborate in the next session, when he talks about three modes of material nature and how thoughts come in. But the point here is that when the thought comes in, if our intelligence is alert, then we will identify the thought. But if the intelligence is not alert, we will identify with the thought. If we look at our mind, it has certain stories which it tells repeatedly. So if our mind tends to be pessimistic, then it will tell the story, life stinks, everything goes wrong, nothing is going to work out. And that is a train of thoughts which will start moving in a particular direction. Or sometimes our mind may have some other train of thought. It might just be angry. It might just be critical of others. This person is just like this. So when the person has done one thing wrong, this person is hopeless. This person is irresponsible. This person is useless. The mind starts telling that story. Now it may be true that person has done something wrong. But once we identify with that, then our whole attitude toward that person starts changing. We start becoming hypercritical, we start harping on them. And then they become alienated further by that. So we have to respond. I'm not saying that we neglect our thoughts, but we have to evaluate it. And for that evaluation, identifying is important. So if we look at our own thoughts, especially when we are in the mode of goodness, when we are in Sattvaguna, then we look at our thoughts, and more importantly, we try to look at our thought patterns. Some of us may have a thought pattern by which we may become very lusty, some of us may become very greedy, very angry, very envious, and very depressed. We may start feeling, I'm lonely, nobody cares for me. We want to talk with someone and that person doesn't respond to the phone. Nobody responds to my phones only. Mind starts saying, when they want me to respond. But when I call them, they don't pick up the phone. So people don't care for me. So the mind, when it wants, it can just take one incident. But that person may be genuinely busy. And they just can't respond. It's not that they don't care. But the mind can take one incident and chart a story from that. So what happens if we identify our thought patterns? Then we tell, this is a loneliness story. The mind, you are lonely, nobody cares for you, nobody loves you. People just treat you like a doormat. The mind just goes on and on and on. So if we identify that, this is the mind that is this telling this loneliness story. This mind is telling the life stinks story. So we identify the thought pattern and then we can distance ourselves from it. Now, it's not true. The point is that identifying with it is going to make the situation worse. It may be true also, and we may need to appropriately respond to it. But identifying with it prevents us from responding appropriately. Because we become impulsive, we get carried away by the mind. So, the conviction of the intelligence that there is this mind which is different from me and doesn't really reflect who I am, and I need to evaluate whatever is happening in the mind, that will enable us to deal with the mind's problems more responsibly. Whatever the mind provides, we will be able to evaluate it and act accordingly. So, if we observe our thought patterns and identify the typical thought patterns that our mind goes through, and then whenever that thought pattern happens, then we will be able to identify it. Hey, this is the story going now. I don't have to identify with it. In the next session, I'll talk more about a two-pronged strategy from inside and outside to deal with the mind when it goes off on wrong scripts, when it starts telling us an unhealthy or unhelpful narrative. At this stage, I'll summarize and then we can have some questions. So, I spoke about how we can transform ourselves, intelligence over mind. How can we discipline our intelligence using our mind? Talked about three stages. There is conviction. Does anyone remember three C's? Conviction, concentration, and then conversion. Conviction is why to do. Concentration is how to do. And conversion is what to expect when we are trying to change ourselves, improve ourselves. So, conviction. Let's go back. Yeah. So, conviction is of the intelligence. We, with intelligence is strong and convinced, then we have concentration of the mind. I mean, the mind will wander here and there. The mind is like a child, the intelligence is like a mother. Focus on this. Then, after that, there is the conversion of the heart. The mind is the source of, or the trigger of various emotions, but the heart is where our deepest, strongest emotions are there. And that center of our emotions will change. Right now, it may be something worldly, but it will become Krishna. And then other emotions will be seen in that context. And we focus today on the aspect of conviction, why to do. And for this conviction, we discussed two thoughts about thoughts, that thought can refer to an incident that occurs within our consciousness. I had a thought. That is the starting activity within consciousness. And thought can also refer to a sustained systematic focus. Oh, I have given this a lot of thought. So, I talked about terms and concepts. Terms are like handles for a suitcase, and the concept is the actual suitcase. So, we have to understand, we may use a particular term, but what concept is it attached to? Otherwise, there can be confusion. So, talk about thoughts in two sense. If you're not thoughtful, thought in the first sense, thought in the second sense, we are evaluating carefully, then our thoughts will make us fools. We'll just act impulsively based on whatever occurs in our consciousness. And thought in the first sense of events occurring in our consciousness, the mind is the presenter of that. And the intelligence is meant to be the evaluator of that. And based on that, the reasoned course of action, the thought as a product of deliberation that is produced by the mind, by the intelligence. Talked about a screen where we are reading something, but then something pops up, some other links are there. So the various links and pop-ups come from the mind. The intelligence is deciding to decide what it focuses on. But the mind, based on its conditionings, has certain default inclinations. So for certain actions, by default, the option will be on yes. Unless we conscientiously say no, that course of action will be done. So, the mind is like, it has filled with hyperlinks, which is open by our giving attention to them. The mind equates attention with assent. And that's how it sometimes misleads us. And the way to deal with the mind's pop-ups is to recognize that just because something is happening within us, that doesn't mean we have to do it. The mind makes good people do bad things, not by killing their conscience, which happens in, say, psychopaths, but by distorting their sense of priorities. Because intelligence means to see things in proper perspective. The mind makes the frivolous seem serious, and the serious seem frivolous. So, looking at sports scores while driving a car can cause an accident. We may diligently read news daily, but may not read Shastra. So the mind distorts our sense of perspective. And if our intelligence is strong, then we can catch this distortion and stop it. Oh, the thoughts that occur within us, they don't necessarily reflect who we are or what we want to be. We can treat our thoughts like our physical neighborhood. Certain actions or certain people may be there over there. They're just there, we don't pay attention to them. How to deal with them, we'll discuss later. But just to understand that just because some thought has come, that doesn't mean I have to act on it. Or that thought reflects reality. If I say I can't lift my phone, that doesn't mean I can't lift. I can lift. The thoughts are frequently not real. And frequent thoughts are frequently not beneficial. So we need to evaluate them. And I talked about in the conclusion about to avoid fusion with the thoughts. If our intelligence is not alert, the thought will pop up and we will say yes and we'll act. That's fusion. But diffusion means instead of identifying with the thought, we identify the thought. And it is not so easy to identify each thought. That requires too much alertness. What we can try to do is identify the major thought patterns. So life stinks thought pattern. One bad thing happens, the mind says it starts making us depressed. Or one person doesn't pay attention to us, mind starts with loneliness story. Oh, you know, nobody cares for you. So once we identify these thought patterns, then we can distance ourselves from them and evaluate and respond appropriately. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. So first we can have questions related with the class, and later on if you have some general questions also, we can discuss them. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much for the thoughtful class on identify and purify our thoughts.
Yes.
So my question is, sometimes we know things are, we know what is right and what is wrong, but we succumb to that. For example, the case of Ajami. So at the time, he, intelligence had the input of all the scriptures, he had all the slokas memorized, but he still succumbed. So, what is the reason why he failed or why we fail in such situations, and how can we overcome? That is the first part. And the second part of the question is, how much to think, because there is a well-known concept, it's called analysis by paralysis, or paralysis by analysis. So how much to think?
Okay. They're two separate questions. So first question is, now Ajamil knew scripture and yet he fell down. So why did that happen and why does something similar happen to us? If we consider that by our past karma, certain situations come in our life. Sometimes, you know, we may meet with an accident, we may lose our job, our health may get spoiled. So when the reactions come at the physical level, we can easily understand, I didn't do anything but this thing has happened. I was just driving safely, but a drunk driver hit me. We understand, there it is. It is my karma coming to me. But just as karma can sometimes hit us at the physical level, similarly, karma can also hit us at a mental level. That means, by the past karma, we may go through phases in our life when certain desires may become very strong. We may go through phases when lust may become very strong, anger may become very strong. That means, by the past conditionings are there. What do we mean by conditioning? Basically, it's a conditioning is the accumulated inclination that is formed by our past actions. A person has drunk repeatedly and now their conditioning is that they have a strong urge to drink. So that alcoholism is something which we can easily correlate. Somebody drank so much and that's how they got the inclination. But it's at another level, it's just karmic reaction. This is the way we acted. So our karmic reactions come in two ways. One is at a physical level, we get some things. But at a mental level also that inclination becomes stronger and stronger. That's also a karmic reaction. So I'm giving this as an example to illustrate that karmic reactions can come at the mental level also. And just as sometimes some karmic correlations we can make out. No, why is this person so angry with me? No, I did that to them and that's why they've done this to me. Maybe it's disproportionate. I did a small thing and they're doing a big thing. But some correlations we can make sometimes. Sometimes we just can't make. No, why? We just don't. Why has this person got such a? It's like an agenda to destroy me. What did I do? We just don't know. It's just karma. We understand that time. And sometimes the karmic correlation we may not be able to make out. So like that, sometimes when suddenly some desires pop up within us, and sometimes we may be able to correlate. You know, maybe I watched that. I did this. That's why this desire is coming now. But sometimes we may not be able to correlate. It just comes. So we'll all go through phases in our life when suddenly the desires, the cravings, the vasanas just increase. Now those are times when we are vulnerable. And if we have good association, if we have overall good lifestyle, I'll be talking more about how to prevent this in the second session. Actually, that's what a large part of the second session is about. But let me complete this. But suffice it to say that by our karma, sometimes it may happen that we are vulnerable. And then at that same time, there is a provocation. See, normally, if somebody behaves rudely with us, we'll just tolerate it. We'll neglect it. But sometimes, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things have gone wrong. And on top of that, somebody behaves rudely. There's an explosion at that time. How dare! So, you know, it is just unfortunate that that rude behavior happened at a time when we are also feeling low. So this sort of, we talk about coincidences as good things happening together. But sometimes bad things seem to happen together also. The time when I am weak, at that time somebody provokes us. Sometimes you may tell, you know, that, you know, let's not talk about this now. Because we know that I am a little irritable, I'm a little weak, and somebody is bringing up something provocative. And we said, let's not talk about it. The other person is understanding. Okay, we'll talk about it later. No, I want to talk about this now only. Then it becomes difficult. So basically, sometimes it may just happen that by past karma, our own inner disposition and our external situation, both may conspire to catch us at a very weak moment. And that's how good people may also do bad things. However, that one lapse is understandable. But in the case of Ajamil, it was not just one lapse. No, okay, at that time, he saw that that woman embracing a man and he got agitated by that. Now that agitation he might not have been able to avoid. And he may just, that desire might also become so strong that he may want to go and associate with her. But what he did was much, much worse. You know, he rejected his chaste wife. He rejected his parents. He started giving up all Brahminical activities and started doing robbing and killing. Now, when he started doing all these things, you know, he rejected his wife, he rejected his parents. Obviously, other Brahmanas, other elders, other friends would have counseled him, no, don't do this. So at that time, he could have stopped himself. So it may happen that a particular desire may just catch us in a weak moment and we may do something wrong. So basically, the first mistake may be circumstantial. But the second, third, fourth mistakes, we can't call them circumstantial. At some point, the circumstantial becomes intentional. That means the others tell them, don't do this. And if he had just given them some hearing, he could have understood, you know, what they're saying makes sense. I should not do this. So sometimes circumstantially something wrong may happen from us. And that it's not that the circumstances make the wrong right. The wrong is still the wrong. But the circumstances make the wrong understandable. You know, why did you do this? But it's one thing to make one mistake. But to let that one mistake lead to a second, third, fourth, fifth, That is not just, we can't blame that on circumstance. That is where it becomes intentional. Sometimes, if we consider, I'm talking about intelligence over mind. Sometimes the mind becomes just so strong that it just overpowers our intelligence and it makes us do wrong things. Srila Prabhupada in the 6th chapter purport says that sometimes the disease may be so malevolent that it overcomes the medicine and it spreads further. So like that, the disease is like the mind's infection, mind's desires, infatuations, and the intelligence understanding is like the medicine. So sometimes the mind may just overpower the intelligence. But after some time, the intelligence does recover. And at that time, what do we do? So if at that time we have been studying scripture systematically, we have been associating with devotees, and we have some trustworthy connections with devotees. Again, I'll talk more about this later in the second session. But we generally evaluate everyone through the filter of the mind. But if we have someone whom we trust enough that we evaluate the mind through them. My mind is saying this is right. They are saying this is right. And okay, then I evaluate the mind. That is the meaning of close association. Close association is not that, you know, we come together and dance in kirtans, we a tight hug to each other. That's all good. But close association means that somebody, we let them come closer to us than how close the mind is to us. That is the meaning of close association. So the first mistake may be inevitable. It may be circumstantial. But if we have good association, if we have a good culture, good habits, then the intelligence will awaken and it will ensure that the first mistake doesn't lead to a series of mistakes. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. Can we come back to you later? We'll talk here. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
So, Hanuman Tesha Maharaj often said in his class at the time that in the Kali Yuga, the thoughts and the mind, mental thinking has no sin or no karmic reaction. That means only the action has a reaction or the effects you will get it. So, in terms of your 2 points is, one is how then the value of the thoughts will really prevail, and also you made the second point is there is also not only the physical karma, there is a mental karma.
That's
so
a good question.
Explain.
Yeah, so it is said in Kali Yuga, thoughts don't bear karmic reactions. So then I also said that there are two meanings of the word thoughts, and we get reactions on the psychological level also. So how do we understand this? Yeah, that section is there in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Parikshit Maharaj allows Kali to come because Kali Yuga has one virtue, that thoughts don't bear karmic reactions. So that's why he allowed Kali to come in over there. So now, there are two different things. Thoughts don't bring karmic reactions, but thoughts can be karmic reactions. It's a different thing. If I have a particular thought, that may not cause me karmic reaction. But a particular thought coming in me, that may be a karmic reaction. If two people are walking along a road, one of them is an alcoholic, the other is a sober person. For the first person, if there is a bar along the way, immediately the thought comes, let's drink, let's drink, let's drink. For the other person, they may not even notice there is a bar over there. Just go to work straight. So, why did this thought pop up in this person? In the alcoholic, that is a reaction to kind of actions that they have done. So, now just because that person thought, oh, let me drink, that is not necessarily a sinful thought. We may get some sinful desires, a sinful at the level of thoughts, they may not bring karmic reactions. But their occurrence itself, just because they are present doesn't make us karmically culpable. But why are they present at all? Why are they present in some people and not present in some people? Their presence is a reaction to the kind of actions that we have done in the past. And secondly, all the thoughts themselves don't produce karmic reactions, but thoughts, if they are not processed, then thoughts will lead us to actions which will have karmic reactions. So if I let a thought not just stay in our mind, in my mind, but I identify with it, I entertain it, then eventually that thought will lead to action. The thought is the ancestor to the deed. procreation has to happen from the ancestor to come to the descendant. But the thought is there, and if our attention, we give attention to the thought, then by that attention causes the thought to grow. So all the thoughts themselves don't produce karmic reactions. That doesn't mean that any and every thought we can nonchalantly entertain within us. Because the thoughts will grow. The more attention we give, the more momentum they get. And then, if they get too much momentum, it will be very difficult to control them. If we are riding a horse, and say the horse is meant to go on this road, it sees some fruit on the off the road, and its head starts going there, and starts moving in that direction. Now, the horse has not gone off the road. There's no danger. But if we don't curb the horse, then it will start moving in that direction. And if we let it go, it will gain more and more momentum. And as it gets more and more momentum, then pulling it back will be much more difficult. So initially, the horse had gone that direction, just bring it back. The horse started running in that direction, pull it back. The horse will gain speed, it will be very difficult. So like that, initially thought pops up, not much of a problem. We just neglect it and move on. We entertain it, it will start growing. And the more the thought grows, it becomes like a horse that has gained momentum. And beyond a particular point, the thought may irresistibly force us into actions. It's not immediately that every thought will force us to actions. But if the thought is entertained, then it can force us into actions. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, Mataji.
Okay, which I was just thinking about the flowchart and computers, and we just started learning how to do computers. If you say keep saying yes, it keeps going. If you say no, it will change the direction. So just trying to think that mind is also, when a thought comes in, I don't give it any attention. And then so it slowly starts withering away. After some time, again, the thought will come. I start saying no. And then after some time, the thought that was coming, that was not Krishna conscious, just for example, that thought would totally be gone. So as we discussing, since we have the subtle body coming from time immemorial, we've been carrying it. So the thoughts from the past, what we have done, the yes and no's of our past also is acting on our present life. Is that understanding right?
Oh yes, definitely. That our thoughts from the past, they come upon us from previous lives to this lives, and it's like in a flow chart, we say yes, or we can say no. And if you keep saying no, then that option disappears. In fact, that is the whole theme of our third session, conversion. In conversion, you're going to say how? By repeatedly saying no, certain thoughts will stop popping within us. The mind will get converted.
So I was just thinking that, so we have to get our intelligence so strong to say yes to Krishna conscious activity and no to anything that is material. So that that will be the end of the mind.
Okay, yeah, we have to make our intelligence strong, yes. And the intelligence needs various supports. What those supports are, I'll be talking in the next session. Thank you. Yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much. I'm really grateful for your presence at IEC. One question I have is, how do we understand soul versus the heart? Like you mentioned that the heart is the one that has the deeper emotions.
Okay.
And when we see the, Bhagavad Gita, we have this very famous picture, the five horses are the five senses, the mind is the reins. Intelligence is the driver and the soul is sitting in the chariot. So, how do I connect heart, consciousness and soul?
Okay. What is the relationship between, say, the soul, consciousness and the heart? The word heart has two meanings. One is the biological heart. Now, when you say, you have broken my heart, it's not the heart is literally broken. So that is not what we are referring to, the biological organ. But the heart, generally when you talk about it, we refer to it as seat of emotions. The seat or the center of emotions is what we call as the heart. Now, the soul is the source of consciousness. The soul is ultimately the experiencer of everything. It is without the soul's consciousness being present, we can't experience any emotions. So the soul is here, then the subtle body is around the soul, then the gross body is there. So the biological heart is something which you are not talking about at all. Now when you talk about the subtle body, in that there is the mind, intelligence, and of course there is the ego which identifies, which causes misidentification. So the mind is where presently most of our emotions are stimulated. The soul in its pure state is centered on Krishna. Soul's emotions are centered on loving and serving Krishna. But when the soul becomes conditioned, then the soul's center of emotions shifts. When the center of emotion shifts, then the soul may become centered on something else. So I said some people become centered on money, someone looks, someone power, prestige, whatever. Now this shifting is what happens based on the conditionings within the mind. So the soul is the source of pure emotions. The soul is the source of pure love, even the center of pure love. And in the pure state, the soul and heart are the same. In the conditioned stage, what is most important for the soul is not necessarily the most important for us right now. Because our conditioning determines that. So then, whatever the mind is most attached to, that is what becomes the most important for us. So for a cricket fan, their heart is in cricket. The wild emotions they experience with respect to the ups and downs that happen in the cricket field. So their heart, in the sense that their center of emotions, is in their particular attachment. So sometimes I talk about these two concepts from physics. Those of you not from science background, don't bother about this. But there is center of mass and there is center of gravity. Center of mass is, if there is a particular object, where does its central mass come? Where the center point of its mass is. But depending on if the object is tilted, or the depend in an asymmetric gravity field, its center of gravity may be different. So if I'm going to lift this laptop. So now if I want to lift this laptop with one finger, then I'll have to just put my finger right now. You know, Krishna lifted Govardhan like that. So I can't do it. But suppose I could lift, say, this phone on my finger. Now this finger has to come right at the center of this phone. Basically, if it's symmetrically created, it's symmetrically structured, then its center of mass and center of gravity will be the same. But if suppose this part of the phone is heavier than this part, then what will happen is, if I want to balance it, I can't put my finger here, I have to put it a little bit over here. So basically, we as pure souls have Krishna as our heart, as a seat of emotions. But in the conditioned stage, it is something different. So our heart may be in money, it may be in various things. So heart is basically, we could see, the seat of the most important emotions for us. And that is based on the central primary attachments of the mind. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, Mora Man Vrindavan. That my mind is Vrindavan. That means the mind is where currently the emotions are being channeled, through which the emotions are being channeled. But there also, it's completely Krishnaized. It's centered on Krishna. So the soul is the source of consciousness. The mind is the channel for the consciousness. So it's like, say, if I'm sitting here and I'm looking out. Now, if this door is transparent, I'll be able to see something from the door. So if there is a wall over here, I can't see through the wall. So I am like the soul. The door for the soul, so what is going out from me is consciousness. And the door through which that consciousness goes out, that is the mind. And depending on the mind's conditionings, say, if I am feeling very hungry, then if I look out, you know, there may be a picture of Lord Chaitanya, there may be chairs, but if there is some prasad, my eyes will zero on that. Oh, when will I... When will I get this prasad? So although there are many things which could be visible through that channel, but based on our attachments, certain things we'll focus on them. So the mind is basically where our seat of emotions primarily is there right now. So the heart is not, when we talk about it, it's not a physical structure. So it's basically the seat of emotions. In the conditioned stage, the heart is situated in our attachments. In the pure stage, the heart is situated in Krishna. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Ram. Welcome to you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for taking us on a deep dive into the mind. That was very helpful. So Prabhu, you mentioned that, you know, sometimes horse basically sees the fruit of the path and, you know, it started moving and it has already gained the momentum. So for me, you know, I have already missed the chance of stopping the horse, right? And you mentioned it's very difficult to cut the horse at that point. But is there, you know, any like remedies out there that we can use to, you know, still try to stop the horse?
So if the horse has become very forceful, then what can we do? Can you still stop the horse? No, even if we can't stop the horse, you know, the horse may just go off the road and may even throw us off. We may get injured a little bit. But after that horse has eaten that fruit, then again, you know, we can get the horse back in control, climb on it and come back on the track. It's a laborious effort. It may be injurious also for us. But it is not impossible. The mind can cause us to fall down, but it is only we who cause us to fall away. Fall down means, as practicing the standard, I had a lapse from the standard. The mind may sometimes force us, it may just not be possible to, at that particular point, to resist. But fall away means we give up the practice itself. We quit. So that quitting, becoming disheartened and quitting, that is something which we needn't do. So even if there's a lapse, we come back on track. And we move onwards, become more cautious so that we can avoid the lapse in future. But just because there has been a mistake, there has been a fall or whatever, that doesn't mean that we have lost our chance. That chance I lost. But again, I have a chance. So we focus always on connecting with Krishna in whatever situation we are. There is that verse, Apechiet Sudaracharo Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak Sadhureva Samantavya Samyag Vyavasito Hi Saha. It's a quite a intriguing verse. Krishna is saying that even if my devotee commits a most abominable activity, Sudaracharo, but Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak, the devotee is determined to serve me, then Sadhureva Samantavya, the devotee is considered to be saintly. Samyak Vyavasito Hi Saha, because the determination is well situated. What this means is, first it may raise a question, you know, if the devotee is Ananya Bhak, is serving me with undistracted intention, with unalloyed devotion, Ananya Bhak, without distraction, then how can that devotee be Sudaracharo? But the point is, what it means is that sometimes because of the conditioning, we may do something wrong. But the intention to serve Krishna is not given up. By the force of conditioning, certain actions may happen. But when those actions happen, if I get disheartened and I give up the practice of Krishna Bhakti. So Krishna is saying, if my devotee doesn't do that, my devotee maintains the intention to serve me. Krishna says, terrible, I'm sorry this happened. I regret it. But no matter what happens, I will keep serving you. That intention, if it is strong, then we can keep marching towards Krishna. Okay? Thank you. Yes? Mm-hmm. You can take the mic behind. Where is it? Yeah. You can ask him. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
I have two questions or comments from internet viewers.
Okay.
So one is from Srivas Chandradas. I'll read his message. Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for such an enlightening lecture. Last time when you were here, you had mentioned a nice point about the mind and intelligence having a dialogue, as if a counselor and counselee are sitting on a chair and talking to each other. I thought this is closely related to today's topic. Could you please elaborate more on this? How do we practically apply it?
So, how can we practically make the intelligence the counselor of the mind? So, just like a counselor may sit and hear and then give advice to a counselee, how can we do that with respect to our intelligence and mind? Generally, it requires a significant level of sattva-guna, mode of goodness. And when we are in the mode of passion and ignorance, we are just running around, it's very difficult. So, if we have to do something which is some major decision I have to take, should I do this or should I do that? Then, various pros and cons are going on in our consciousness. If I do it, this will happen. If I do that, that will happen. Should I do this? Should I do that? And at that time, when the thoughts keep going on in our head, they just cause two things. They cause congestion and exhaustion. You know, they just congest our mind, you know. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I take this job? Or should I take that job? Should I marry this person? Should I marry that person? Should I take any decision from this guru? Should I take any decision from that guru? Should I join this ashram? Should I join that ashram? You know, the thoughts, when we have to make major decisions, the thoughts just keep going on and on and on and on and on. And when the thoughts are going on, they just congest. We can't really do anything effectively. Because whatever we are trying to do, the thought keeps going on. And sometimes when the thoughts just keep going on, they cause so much exhaustion. Sometimes we wake up in the morning, and then maybe for a couple of hours we work and we feel exhausted. We've not done much physical activity, but the mind is running. And that causes exhaustion. So when this is happening, and we have to take some important decision, the first step in separating the mind and the intelligence is to get the thoughts out of the head. If it's a major decision, just write things down. Get everything that is, okay, this is the pros of this, these are the cons of this. Just write everything down. Just get it out. And at that time, we don't have to evaluate anything. So whatever is my concern, whatever is my fear, whatever is my desire, whatever is my hope, just uncritically, just write it down. So that is when we are giving our mind expression. Let the mind have its say. Just speak it out. Write it down. And then just by that, our inner pressure will go down. Because, you know, we feel, okay, the thoughts, I've expressed them. Some amount of calmness comes up with that. And then maybe after 24 hours, when the surge of expression is that has gone down, we become a little calm, then we evaluate. Okay, this is what I wrote down. That is the time when our intelligence comes into play. You know, I feel like doing this. Yeah, you know, this reason, it's a valid reason. No, this, I need to get more information. I'm just presuming it's like this, but it may not be like this. This, okay, it may be true, but here I might be just too sweeping over here. Let me qualify this. There may be some nuances over here. So basically, whatever we have expressed, we go through that and evaluate that. This is a time when we let the mind have its say and we are evaluating the products of the mind with our intelligence. And based on that, we may categorize. Okay, you know, this is a valid point. This is where I get more information. And this is where I'll have to deliberate more. So we get our thoughts in some organized framework. This need not be final. Sometimes, you know, if a major decision has to be made, the counselee may not just in one session be able to come to a decision. The counselee, they meet, they discuss. And the counselor says, I'll think about this. The counselor says, I'll also think about it. And then they meet again. Maybe sometimes multiple sessions are required. So like that, if it's a major decision, we may have to decide that, okay, I have next 6 months to take the decision. Then I will revisit this issue regularly. So basically now, when we expressed ourselves and then we evaluated that expression, by this, we have got a snapshot of our mind in our diary. We have got, snapshot of our inner world, both the mind and the intelligence. We have written it down. And then we may decide, every week, maybe on a weekend or something, I'll spend half an hour or 1 hour revisiting this and analyzing this further. Because as we go through life, we get certain experiences, we get certain thoughts, certain ideas, some parameters we may not have thought of. And in the course of the week, if any thought comes up, should I do this, should I not do this, I will not dwell on it at that time. If some new thought has come up, new consideration has come, I'll just note it down. Because generally speaking, anything that requires deep deliberation needs to be done in the mode of goodness. And if we try to do it when we are in the mode of passion or in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of ignorance, if we try to do it, we just feel overwhelmed. Life is so complicated. What to do? I don't know. Or in the mode of passion, we just feel, hey, I've been thinking so long, I have to do something now. We just take a snap decision. And sometimes it may be a knee-jerk reaction, which may not be good. So basically, in the course of the week, if some thought comes, just note it. If it's a new thought, just note it down. And then in the framework we are prepared, this is the pro, these are the cons. This, I don't know, is it a pro or a con? I have to evaluate this further. So just put it in the framework. And say if we do this regularly for, 3 months, 6 months, whatever time we have, then we get a more refined understanding of ourselves. And then after 6 months, I feel, yes, this is what I was thinking of 6 months ago. This is what I'm thinking about now. If my overall thought is the same, then that means this is not just some impulsive feeling that I have. This is some deep-rooted inclination. This is something deep within me. And then I'll do this thing. Over 6 months, sometimes it may just change completely. I was thinking like this, but now I'm thinking like this. But whatever decision we may take through this process, it is not necessary that it will be the right decision. Even when we take the best counseling, and the counselor is not God. So the counselor may also not be able to always give us the best decision. It's possible sometimes. But, you know, life never comes with a guarantee of good decisions. But what we can bring into life is good deliberation about our decisions. So if I had done good deliberation, if in future some other factor comes up by which, hey, I didn't know this earlier. And this one factor is such that now I have to change my decision. But then because we have a framework, okay, you know, it's not just because this happened, I changed this. Because this happened, this was what my considerations were. Now this new information is so important that I need to change it now. So basically, whatever we are going to do, we have a reasoned framework for doing it. And then if the mind says, no, I don't feel like doing it, we'll have the conviction to push on. This is important. These are the reasons why I'm doing this. And if some major alteration happens, then we will also be able to do some course correction. And that will also be done with new thought, not just again as a knee-jerk reaction. It's say, if we are going to travel somewhere, we put in the destination and Google Maps gives us a path. Okay, this is the path. But then, say, there is a crash that has happened on the road. Then we recalibrate. Okay, now this is a delay over here. Okay, take this road now. Do this. So if there is a structured program, if there is systematic planning, then that recalibration can also be done. So similarly for us, there is no guarantee that through deliberation we'll always come to the right decision. But through deliberation, we will be able to choose the best course of action in the situation that we are in, with the information that we have. And if the information changes, we have to change the decision also, we'll be able to change it. And if the mind's emotions change, we won't just get carried away. Because we have reason. Then, no, I don't feel like doing it, but still I will persevere because this is important. And these are the reasons why I'm going to do this. So in that way, we can make the best choices in our situation by separating the mind's expression and the intelligence's evaluation. The problem happens when we try to do both at the same time. If as soon as a thought comes in, we start evaluating it. Then, it becomes what, like sometimes our computer gets overloaded. Too many programs are going on. Then everything slows down and nothing seems to be happening. So like that, if expression and evaluation, both we try to do simultaneously, then there is cognitive overload. oh, we just can't move forward. So one way to make the intelligence the counselor of the mind is just if both the counselor and counselor are speaking at the same time, then nothing will happen, isn't it? So let the counselor speak, then let the counselor speak. So like that, let the mind speak first in a safe zone, in our own private journal, and then let the intelligence speak. So by separating the two in a structured way and then bringing the two in a dialogue, we can actually make the intelligence the counselor of the mind. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
One more question. This is also from internet. Does Maya influence through thoughts that pulls us in some direction like temptation? Does she walk through the mind, through the thoughts?
Okay.
This is from Karna Gajal.
Okay. Thank you. So does Maya influence us through our thoughts which come through the mind? Yes, definitely. There are two ways broadly in which we may do something, we may succumb. One is an external object comes which is very attractive, and that object triggers a desire within us. The second is the desire comes within us and that takes us to the object, or that makes us go to the object. Like say an alcoholic is trying to recover, and then they go to a party where there is alcohol. They see everybody drinking, and that external object stimulates the desire. So in this case, the temptation came from outside in. But in some cases, the alcoholic may decide, I want to give up. But then they're sitting alone and they're feeling lonely. I want a break. I want some stimulation. I want to drink. In that case, it was inside. And then from there, they go to a bar and they drink. So Maya can attack us both through the external situation, or it can act us through the internal desire coming in. So it works both ways. But the key thing is that it is whether the stimulus comes from external perception or it comes from internal recollection. It is only when we let it translate into an intention that is when we succumb. So if we don't do that, then Maya may propose something externally or propose something internally. But if we don't let it become an intention, then we won't succumb. Okay, thank you. Yes, okay, we'll come to you, Maya. You can give the mic here.
So, just one question I had was, Prabhupada, is the source of willpower or determination, is it seated in the mind, or is it seated with both the mind and the intelligence?
Okay. Is determination situated in the mind, or is it situated in the intelligence? It's both. Because if we consider Dhruva Maharaj, when he was insulted, at that time he said, I am going to get a kingdom bigger than my grandfather's, my whole dynasties. Now that the desire was largely from the mind. The mind had felt hurt because of insult, disrespect. The pride was hurt. But then from that, the determination came. And he was ready to perform phenomenal austerity for that. So generally, if the determination comes from the mind, then that is usually something which more or less agrees with the inclination of the mind. That means that a Kshatriya also have a lot of determination. But the determination is primarily for getting power, getting position, getting property. So we, even materialistic people, do have determination. There may be, sometimes some people go to a party where they're going to drink. But if they're going to drive back, even in that drinking, we call it a tamasic activity. But even there may be some sattva guna. What do you mean by sattva guna? They may decide. See, if you are going to drive back, today you have to perform austerity. You can't drink today. No, you take some non-alcoholic beverage. And others will drink. Next time in the party, you drink. I will not drink. So even when they are doing the tamasic activity, you could have total tamasic activity where you drink and you try to drive. But even a tamasic activity, even in an activity like drinking, there can be some regulation. Now, everybody else is drinking and I decide I will not drink. Now, that requires some amount of determination. That person doesn't have the determination to not go to a drinking party itself. And that person doesn't have the determination to give up drinking all the time. But they have the determination, right now I won't drink. Why? Because at that time, there is based on Rajoguna profit loss calculation. Oh, if I drink and I drive, I get caught. I will lose my license. And that will be a big loss. So basically, we can have determination emerging from the mind also. If the mind is very attached to something, the mind considers something very important. Or there are two things which we are evaluating. So sometimes materialistic people may also work extremely hard. Now at one level, we can say people who are materialistic, they are very attached to the body. They want bodily gratification. But when they work very hard, they are actually putting their body to austerity. So in that case, to do that requires determination. But the determination is based on a relative evaluation of which material thing is more important. So in Rajoguna, if I find that something is important for me, if I decide that, then the Rajasic mind can have enormous amount of determination also. Now the expertise of Dhruva Maharaj was, of Narad Muni was that Rajasic determination was directed towards transcendence. Although he wanted a kingdom, but because he associated with Narad Muni, he was directed towards Krishna. And as he became purified eventually. So determination can come from the mind when the mind considers something very, very important. And determination can also come from the intelligence. That means that if I have studied scripture, if I have deliberated seriously, I understand this is important for me. Then even in the mind, I don't want to do this. No, you are going to do this. So the mind feelings are just fleeting, up and down, but through that we persevere. So in bhakti, I'll be talking about this hopefully in the future session, that you know, we want to channel the mind also in Krishna's service and we want to channel the intelligence also in Krishna's service. So certain tendencies of the mind may be good also. So, in the sense that we like to do certain things. And in that, even if I'd like to do something, I like to write, say. Even when I like to write, at that time, it is not that I always like to write. The mind is very comfortable writing. And if I decide writing is my main service, I can do it very well. So, the mind has a particular inclination and in that determination is relatively easier to have. Because that's the basic principle of the varanashram. Our vritti, our particular the particular inclination of our varana, where is that situated? It's in subtle body. And the mind is naturally attracted towards that. We can do it well. But even when we are doing something which we like to do, when we like to do something, determination in that is relatively easier to have. But even in that, there are times when we will not like it. There are writers who get writer's block. Sometimes, we may like to manage, delegate and do things. But sometimes, why did I take this up, I just don't feel like doing it. There's an author who says that writing is very easy. All that you have to do is sit in front of a computer and glare at the screen till drops of blood form on your forehead. So sometimes, even somebody who likes to write, they may not like. Because it's right, nothing seems to be happening. At that time, you have to persevere. So we need, for doing something in a sustainable way in our life, we need to channel the mind's inclination. We can be easily determined in that direction. But we want to channel it in a constructive way, like it happened for Dhruva by Narad Muni's direction. But even while doing something which the mind likes to do, where it is easier to be determined, sometimes the mind will be wavering even in that. And that time, we need the intelligence. So determination can come both from the mind and the intelligence. Okay, thank you. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you, Guru, for the wonderful class. So my question is, in Shastra we hear that Paramatma sometimes guides us from within, and we see that in some people say that I heard a voice within myself and I followed that, which never happened to me, by the way. So how do we know that it's the instruction is coming from Paramatma or it's just a random thought? Is there any way to differentiate?
So how do we know whether some thought that is coming up is the guidance from Paramatma or is it just a random thought? generally, now our inner world is like a black hole. Now what is happening in it, what is coming from where, it's very, very difficult to pursue. So where some thought is coming from is difficult to know. What we can know is where that thought is taking us. So that means, okay, you know, I have a desire to go to Vrindavan. I want to go for Yatra this year. Now we may say, this is a very good thought. You know, it's a spiritual thought. But if I have some important service over here and I'm going there just to run away from this service, then that may not be so good. If I am being irresponsible, then I may displease Vaishnava. Normally, if I go for Yatra, it will be pleasing to devotees. But if I'm neglecting my responsibility and going, that may be displeasing to devotees. So I have to see whether this is actually taking me closer to Krishna or it's not taking me closer to Krishna. So we evaluate the thought based on merit, not based, or rather we evaluate the thought based on its consequence, not on its source. It's very difficult to know what its source is. We can evaluate to some extent, is this thought according to Shastra? But quite often that's very difficult because the cultural context we live in today is so different, so removed from the cultural context of Shastra, that it may be not easy to compare our thought with some Shastric situations. So generally, if we use our intelligence to evaluate, okay, you know, I'm feeling like doing this right now. Should I or should I not do this? Okay, if I do this, what is going to happen? Yeah, if I do this, you know, yeah, this is, I feel like studying Shastra today. Okay, I don't have anything urgent to do, let me do it. And it's taking me closer to Krishna. So basically, if we evaluate the consequence, phalena parichayate, we look at the fruit, and based on that we can decide. So the operational principles of surrender are two. That is anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. Accept that which is favorable and avoid that which is unfavorable. So if we can evaluate what is the consequence of this, and sometimes for that we may have to consult others also. Or we may have to pause at that time and evaluate. And we can't evaluate at that time because the new idea has come. It's just the creative juices are going so high in our brain. This is so good, I must do it right now. But we may not be able to see the various ramifications, the various consequences that may occur. So we may need to just decide, pause. I'll have to evaluate this and right now I can't evaluate. So let me pause. Let me put this in the car park and maybe after a day or two I'll evaluate it, consult some other people, some other devotees, and then based on that I'll decide. So, if we focus on looking at the consequence rather than the source, then we can evaluate the thoughts based on merit and then act appropriately. Okay? Thank you. So, okay. Shall we stop here, Sanandu? Okay, one last question and then we can stop there after. Yes, you can tell, I'll repeat the question. When you speak, I'll repeat.
I was just wondering that it's a common saying that we are the sum of our thoughts, right? And I was still thinking that we are sum of the thoughts, but I'm just trying to verify that's really true or is that?
Okay. So are we the sum of our thoughts? Yes, but it is that it's a weighted sum. Weighted sum means, you know. So, some thoughts have much more influence, some thoughts don't have that much influence. So, the weight of some thoughts may be much more, the weight of some thoughts may be much lesser. So, broadly, our thoughts do shape who we are. And the kind of thoughts that we regularly have, that we regularly entertain, that we regularly cultivate, they will shape both who we are and who we will become. At the same time, it is not that every thought that we have, it defines who we are. There are some thoughts just come and they go. So overall, if you're practicing bhakti, then our thoughts become more elevated, they become more spiritual, they become more selfless, more service-oriented. And that's how we can say that we are becoming more spiritually advanced. It's the thoughts within our consciousness can be of a very wide variety in their nature. And And it is, rather than saying that I am the sum of my thoughts, which is true at one level, rather it is I will be which I am the thoughts which I focus on. That's why I said it's a weighted sum. There will be 10 different thoughts in my mind, but this is the thought which I want to focus on. This is the thought which I want to grow. So just like a student, when they are trying to decide which career I want to follow. Right now they are students. They can become an engineer, can become a lawyer, can become a chartered accountant, can become a pilot, whatever. Now all those ideas may be there in their mind. They will choose one idea and then they will persevere. That student who could have become anything, all those four thoughts were there in the student's mind. I want to become a pilot. Then they choose that, persevere in that course of action, then they'll become a pilot. So similarly, we have various thoughts within us, but we also have the initiative, or we have the responsibility to choose which thoughts we dwell on. And the thoughts we dwell on will become bigger and bigger, and that's what we will eventually become. Even now, the thoughts which we dwell on right now, they will shape how we behave. So for example, when I meet someone, no, there is raga and dvesha that sometimes is there. Sometimes we just like some person, you know, just want to be with them. And sometimes we just don't like the person, I just want to get away from this person, there's aversion. And sometimes both are there at the same time. We like something about that person and we don't like something about that person. So then, am I the sum total of that that attraction and aversion? Maybe, but if at a particular time I decide, okay, this thing is good about this person, I'll focus on this quality. And then my affection and the affectionate disposition may increase. Or sometimes, I dwell on that aversion part. And then I'll become more reserved, more retreat into myself. And then the interaction will become more straight. So we are not just the sum of our thoughts, we are also the selector of our thoughts. And based on which thoughts we select, that's what we'll become. Okay? So, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Gaur Premanande.
Shri
Prabhupada ki.
So, we'd like to thank Jajina, His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhu for the wonderful session, one part of the series. And there are so many insightful points that